Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time for Darren, Donick, and Chase. With hosts Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, and Chase McCabe. On Nashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
Third hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase. We are live here at the Corn Ferry Tour. Simmons Bank Open for the Snedeker Foundation here at the Grove. Down here in, I guess it's officially College Grove. It's the Arrington area. It is beautiful. Absolutely gorgeous day here in Middle Tennessee. Gorgeous here at this golf tournament. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, and Chase McCabe with you. We say hello to John Clayton. Always good to chat with him. The professor is on the line. John, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
You're doing fantastic. We were just having a pretty lively discussion in the last segment of the last hour about the Aaron Rodgers saga in Green Bay and possible landing spots. And, of course, the Titans have been mentioned. Bill Barnwell put out an article, and they were one of the teams. What do you make of what's going on in Green Bay? How in the heck did they get to this point?
Because management just screwed up. They didn't keep Aaron Rodgers in the loop. They drafted a quarterback in last year in the first round that was brought in to replace him, and then they don't get him any talent on the offensive side of the ball. And so he just got fed up with it. I mean, it's all, and you go back to a team a little north of Nashville, the Cincinnati Bengals, back in 2011, Carson Palmer was going through some of the same things. You know, like, for example, he only had two winning playoff seasons in 7 years. In 2010, they were 4-12, and they just didn't get him any talent. And so basically, he took the tact and says, you know what? It's like, I'm never going to step foot in Paul Brown Stadium again, and I got $80 million in the bank, and I can guarantee I'm not going to be there. Well, his agent was David Dunn. Aaron Rodgers' agent is David Dunn. And so I think it's the same type of thing that you're not going to see Aaron Rodgers step in Lambeau Field again ever. And so now it's a matter of when the Packers realize that. But the problem came down to the fact that they didn't tell him they were going to draft a quarterback. They didn't get him any players on offense last year. And then this year they take two players that were non-wide receivers and go that way with a cornerback in the first round and a center in the second round. And so it's like if you're Aaron, you just get fed up with it. There's no trust there. And the fact that they took the deal with Jordan Love, that still has been bugging him. And if you go back in the history of Aaron Rodgers, Aaron's always been a guy that's true to his word. And so when he's telling free agents on the team that he's not going to be there, free agents that the Packers are considering, and remember, they didn't sign a single player in unrestricted free agency, you can see this thing is for real.
How for real is it, John? Do you think, honestly, he gets moved this offseason?
Not offseason, no. I think it's going to be more during the season because you go back to Carson Palmer. They didn't move him to the middle of October. And so what happened was that the Raiders lose their starting quarterback, and now they have an opening. But when you look at it right now, you only have really two teams that would be in the mix to do something because obviously we can talk about Bill Barnwell saying that Tennessee would be in the mix, but they do have Ryan Tannehill. And can they take the cap hit to be able to move that and then be able to take the draft choice hit? But I think it's Denver and Washington. More likely Denver, because with the no-trade clause he has in his contract, he probably wants to pick the team he goes to. I know his fiancée is in Boulder, Colorado. So I think in the end, if it's going to be a trade, it'll be a trade in October, and then he can go to the Denver Broncos.
If that is the case, how awkward will training camp and the preseason and the start of the season be for Aaron Rodgers just being around some people that clearly he doesn't want to be around anymore?
Well, he's not going to be there, so it's like I don't know where he's going to be, in California or wherever, but he's not going to be in Green Bay. It's going to be uncomfortable for Green Bay because they don't have a quarterback other than Jordan Love. Mm. I mean, they're now looking around trying to see about finding some veterans, but it's so late in the process. What are they going to be able to sign? It's like, for example, yesterday, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers signed Blake Bortle. I mean, that's how bad it is right now in the quarterback market. And so, what are you going to do? Because if Jordan Love is ready or not ready to play, I mean, you're basically going into a rebuilding stage. I mean, this is probably the last year that the Packers are going to be a playoff team for a couple of years, because now they have to go into the rebuilding mode. And again, this is all on management.
A lot of people have thrown out there, you know, Russell's unhappy where you are in Seattle. Aaron's unhappy. Just do the perfect swap. Trade, you know, future Hall of Fame quarterbacks and do that. What do you make of that when people have thrown that out there?
It's Russell Wilson's story was the most overdone, stupid story that I think I've ever covered in all my year covering the NFL. Because, first off, to trade him, 12-win team that's trying to aspire to go back to the Super Bowl, they'd have to take a $39 million cap hit and go into a rebuilding process for 2 or 3 years. It was never going to happen. Sure, he wanted more voice, and he got his voice. I mean, even though he was upset with the number of times he was hit last year, the number of sacks, you know, they got him Gabe Jackson for the offensive line, Gerald Everett at tight end, brought back Chris Carson, gave Tyler Lockett a long-term deal, drafted a wide receiver, second round, got him a young tackle in the sixth round, I mean, and then got him an offensive coordinator that he liked. So they listened to his voice, and you know, and everybody keeps on bringing up the idea, oh, yeah, Russell Wilson was going to be traded. He was never, ever going to be traded. $39 million cap hit doesn't work, particularly in a year where you have an 8% drop in the cap to $182.5 million.
We're talking to John Clayton, who's covered the NFL for quite some time. And the last thing on Aaron Rodgers, you know, we all know his star is much brighter than what Carson Palmer's was. And Aaron has shown that, you know, he's kind of got the plan for what's next after football. He's done the Jeopardy stuff. How much should that factor into Green Bay's decision of knowing that, you know, hey, he'll just essentially retire like Palmer did, go host Jeopardy? And should that make another team nervous that might be interested in trading for him, of knowing that, you know, he could walk in here and not be happy and go do the same thing?
No, I think that, because again, it's such a limited number of teams that are going to be able to do anything, that the Jeopardy thing, I mean, Jeopardy would be flying in on a Tuesday and doing 5 shows. And again, I don't, he did a good job, but I don't know if he did a good enough job to get the job. But even if he does get the Jeopardy gig, it doesn't affect his football. I mean, it'll be no different than Brandon Marshall, you know, doing, a Tuesday for one of the cable networks on the NFL. So, no, that wouldn't affect anything. But in the end, I think what you're looking at is that, Aaron is not going to be in Green Bay, and the Packers at some point have to realize that and figure out what to do. They can't trade him now because it would be a $38 million cap hit. And remember, the one thing that Aaron has in his pocket is a $6.8 million roster bonus that he got in March. So he has the ability and the finances to basically say, hey, if I have to lose $6.8 million of paychecks, fine. I mean, he's willing certainly to give up the $500,000 workout bonus that he has. And, you know, he's got $6.8 million in the bank right now that Carson Palmer didn't have.
You do some stuff for the Fan in Denver as well. So what's going to happen with this whole Juwan James situation after he tears his Achilles working out off-site? I mean, it looks to me like he's going to lose a lot of money.
$32 million. He's got $10 million this year, $11 million the next 2 years. And so basically by, you know, and again, this is where there has to be a little bit of a wake-up call to some of the players, the veterans that are, you know, boycotting and not going in there for the OTAs, is that if this happened to Juwan when he was in Denver in the facility, then he has protection. Now he has no protection. He's going to miss the season. And also remember, you know, he only got paid $150,000 last year because he opted out. And so, you know, the final 3 years of his contract, they're not going to honor, I'm sure. I don't know when they're going to do it, but you would anticipate he's going to be cut non-football injury. And that's why the league sent the reminder. It's like, hey, if you're away from the facility, you suffer a serious injury, and it's like you're going to lose. And so now some players have to start thinking, oh, wait a second, do I really want to continue this boycott and not be there and risk getting an injury? Because, again, players are going to get hurt. I mean, look at Quinton Williams, the defensive end for the New York Jets. Not going to be negative because he's probably one of their best, if not their best, defensive player. I mean, he ended up getting a bad foot injury away from the facility, and he's going to be out 8 to 10 weeks. So, you know, if you're on your own, I mean, you may be in bad shape if you suffer a major injury. And you know, so now that's why you can probably see that the Broncos are going to sign Dennis Kelly or maybe sign you know, Charles Leno. How good of a right tackle fit would Kelly be for the Denver Broncos?
Well, he was a good right tackle fit for the Tennessee Titans, so they cut him, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot to like about Dennis Kelly. Yeah. Presumably, I mean, as long as he still has got it in the tank, which I guess is the question, but I think the guy has got a lot going for him. He's got all
just
the
to follow up,
intangibles.
What did you like about the way he blocked?
Well, they had a 2,000-yard rusher.
Yeah, that was the big thing.
You know, I just think he surprised us every year, John.
I liked his
was a guy that, like, when they
you
first
plug
traded
it,
from,
right, you can plug and play him anywhere.
Well, that's the other thing he's always been able to do. Even if he ends up not being your starting tackle, which he ended up being, they fixed him at the right tackle position. But before that, of course, he could play literally any position along the line.
Yeah, he filled in for Lawan when he was suspended at left. So, I mean, he's your ultimate swing guy that can play pretty much anywhere. So I mean that was something that, you know, really, and it was one of John Robinson's best moves early on in his tenure here as GM of the Titans. Sticking with the Broncos for a second, is this a true competition between Drew Lock and Teddy Bridgewater? Is it going to be 50-50 in camp and then the best one gets the job, or how do you see this working?
I'd see it being 50-50, but I see Bridgewater winning a job. And the main reason being is that he's a better quarterback right now than Drew Lock. I mean, Drew Lock last year regressed to a point where he completed less than 60% of his passes, regressed to a point where he was tied for the league lead with 15 interceptions. And really, they had to make the playbook easier for him as the season went on because he was kind of getting lost in the playbook. Bridgewater comes in, you know, he completes more than 66% of his passes, 7.3 yards of attempt. He's not a guy. Now, again, he's not a great quarterback. I mean, his QBR is like 48, so it's not that great. But what you can see with him is he's going to come in and you know, probably win the job because you know he doesn't throw many interceptions. He's good at that, and you know he's been to one Pro Bowl. Drew Lock hasn't even been close to the Pro Bowl unless you know he wanted to visit it somewhere in his rookie year. But in the end, it's like I think that Teddy Bridgewater is going to win it, but what they did is that they want to have the competition 50-50 to see if they can press Drew Lock because they need to make a decision on him because this is his last year, and that's why I think that they passed on Justin Fields because they also in the back of their mind said, you know what, we may have a chance to get Aaron Rodgers.
Talking to John Clayton, and John, you know the NFC West about as well as anybody. As you know, the AFC South will go up against the teams from that division this year. So as you look right now, how would you assess the four teams, Seahawks, Rams, 49ers, and Cardinals? Because that's a pretty intriguing division.
It really is. I mean, it's the best division in football. And I think what you're looking at is four teams that actually can compete for playoff spots. I still give Seattle the edge because they won 12 games last year. They have the best quarterback in the division in Russell Wilson. They were able to add talent, and particularly, you know, they were able to fix up their defense a little bit better. You know, they're a little questionable at cornerback, but they're better on the defensive line. You look at, I think, the Rams being maybe number two, but here's the concern I have about the Rams. They're a better team with Matthew Stafford at quarterback, but they had 11 free agents, and the only one they were able to keep was Leonard Floyd. And so they lose John Johnson. They trade Michael Brockers, a defensive end. They lose a linebacker. You know, they lose their starting center. And they have $42.2 million in cap tied up in Stafford's contract. And the Jared Goff deal is dead money. You know, San Francisco, I think, has a chance to bounce back. You know, now knowing that Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be the quarterback and a pretty good, talented team. And Arizona's a rising team. I thought they were one of the better rising teams in the league last year, and I think they're continuing to rise. So really, I think you're looking at, you know, four teams that at the very least can win eight games.
John, you mentioned the Cardinals and the rise. They made some pretty interesting moves in the offseason. Do you like the J.J. Watt and some of the other – I would have to categorize them as pretty bold moves to try to put some veterans in there with the young talent?
I do. I don't know. I was totally sold on their draft, but I like what they did because, again, it's like they probably weakened themselves by at the cornerback position because, you know, they lose a great one in Patrick Peterson. So that's, I think, a concern. You know, and Robert Alford has missed two seasons right now. He came back and signed for the minimum. Cornerback's still an issue, but you know, certainly the DeAndre Hopkins moves last year kind of put them over the top. I don't think Larry Fitzgerald's coming back. That's going to hurt. You know, their offensive line still has some question, but you know, they've got Kyler Murray, one of the best young quarterbacks in the league, and enough talent. They're still a little bit weak at the running back position. You know, that's something that I don't know why they didn't re-sign Kenyon Drake. I mean, he ends up going to the Raiders to be a backup, and so at $5.5 million a year. But that's still a good football team with a great young quarterback.
Finally, John, let's flip it the other way. What do you see in the AFC South, particularly Colts, Titans at the top? Who do you give the edge to as we sit here today?
Right now, because, I mean, there's been so many up and downs right now with the roster, you know, the cornerback position with the Titans and, you know, different moves, letting guys go and stuff like that. I kind of give the edge right now to the Colts. We'll see where it goes with Carson Wentz, but I think Frank Reich can do a good job with him. I mean, it's still two playoff caliber teams, but I kind of give the edge right now to the Colts. You know, they added two pass edge rusher, defensive ends. That did help. I mean, they do have a big question mark at left tackle that they got to resolve because Anthony Casanzo retired. So are they going to sign Charles Leno, or what are they going to do there? But I think overall, the slight edge goes to the Colts, and obviously Houston's just a trash dump right now, and Jacksonville is on the rebuilding process. So there's, you know, it looks like, you know, they'll probably go 5-1 in a division for both teams.
John, great insight. Always like catching up to you. Thank you for your time today, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, John Clayton, great NFL insider. Always great to pick his brain. He is awesome. He's one of the best. Let's come back here in a few minutes, and we'll sort of rehash some of the things you heard. He had some pretty pointed opinions on the whole Aaron Rodgers situation. It seems to me that John Clayton thinks that he is going to be traded. Let's go back through that in a moment. But in the meantime, let me tell you about a great sponsor we have on our radio station called Loan Pronto. And once again, the message is forget everything you know about getting a home loan because it's all changed now. Loan Pronto has streamlined this process. They've made it a lot quicker, easier, much more convenient, and it's still going to save you a lot of money over the long term. Ask about the zero-cost refi. If your current mortgage rate is over 3%, you can refinance now, get a better rate, and Loan Pronto can cover all your closing costs so that you can either lower the monthly payment, which is a huge thing to start with, or if you want to take out a home equity loan, you can get thousands of dollars to do a home improvement project, move money towards something else like covering some debt, anything that might be on your mind. That is a move that's available to you, and you can access that by calling Loan Pronto at 615-499-5780. That's 615-499-5780. It is an absolute thing that you need to do from the financial standpoint. It's smart. Loan Pronto, zero cost refi, 615-499-5780 or loanpronto.com, equal housing lender.
NMLS 1661781, subject to lender approval. No cash refi, not available on all loans.
All right, let's go to Funky Town. Let's give you an opportunity to win a really, really cool prize. A pair of two-day passes to the Pilgrimage.
Time out. Two over.
You say such dumb things.
There's a festival that's coming to Franklin. The Rodgers Butchered. It's Saturday and Sunday, September 25th and 6th. It's at the farm in Harlandsdale. And you're going to hear acts like Dave Matthews Band, the Black Keys, Maren Morris, Cage the Elephant, Tanya Tucker, Better Than Ezra, and a lot more. By the way, I could listen to those Floyd drops the entire show. I mean, if we want to work them in, just however we want.
You don't know Nate Davis from A Jar of Vicks.
All right, this is your question that you must answer and tell Max Herz back at our Wholesale Link Game Studios powered by RumbleOn.com. And you're going to have to call in on our phone line driven by Wilson County,
Hyundai.com, 615-737-1025. 737-1025. John Means pitched a no-hitter last night for the Orioles. And it was a unique no-hitter because it's never been done before. The only thing that kept him from a perfect game was a passed ball third strike. Isn't that crazy? That's what kept him from
a
perfect
strikeout.
Game. A strikeout.
Yeah.
What is it, a wild
ball
pitch?
How did they rule it? Was it a wild pitch or a passed ball?
I think it's a passed ball third strike, right? So that's what kept him. That's never been done on a no-hitter. He ended. The Orioles and the Padres had the longest streaks in Major League Baseball without a no-hitter. They had both gone 52 years, and both were snapped this year. Joe Musgrove did it for the Padres.
Musgrove.
Yeah. Why did I say Musgrove? Oh, because we're playing at Musgrove Park.
Are you thinking
on Saturday in Shelbyville? Yeah. That's why I said that.
Are you thinking of former NASCAR driver Ted Musgrove?
No, it was probably Musgrove Park. Joe Musgrove of the Padres and John Means of the Orioles, both Baltimore and San Diego, 52 years without a no-hitter, both snapped this year, and we're in early May, which is crazy. So the question is, now who's on the clock? Who's the franchise that's now gone the longest without a no-hitter?
Oh, well, that's easy. It's the – yeah. Just call him
737-1025. 615-737-1025. Name the Major League Baseball franchise that now is the leader in the clubhouse of longest without a no-hitter. If you want, I'll give you the years or not. No?
No, let's see if somebody was paying attention. Okay. A true sports fan. Okay. A well-rounded sports fan. Give that person the advantage.
There are, what, 32 teams in MLB? So you've got a 1
30.
In 30. So there's already been two names. So you've got a 1 in 28 shot of predicting the correct franchise.
That was quite an interesting thing last night is the guy reached on a strikeout. Right? I don't know how they ruled it. Wild pitcher pass ball. It doesn't really matter. Because the next batter, the guy tried to steal and he was thrown out. So he only so nobody got a walk or nothing. It was as perfect as you could be without being a perfect game.
Right. That is weird.
He threw, listen to this. This is amazing. Which has also never been done.
Yeah.
26 first pitch strikes. Never been done. 26 of the 27 batters first pitch strikes.
That's pretty amazing. He threw some pitches. I didn't watch the game, but I saw the highlights of the game.
Getting a lot of wrong answers, by the way. Max is funneling through a lot of phone calls, a lot of apparently wrong answers. So keep calling, 615-737-1025.
He threw some of the prettiest change-ups I've ever seen. And they were missing them
reaching,
by 3 feet.
Yeah. Missing by a mile.
I mean, completely fooled. It's like, dude, he's coming with the change-up. Like, it makes you wonder. Like, it's so deceptive that they could not see it. They could not make an adjustment.
I know one thing. I love these trivia questions that we do, but I am scared to death every time we do them that one day you're going to catch me when I'm like not paying attention, and I'm just going to blurt out the answer, and you're going to kill me. Like that has been an actual fear of mine of when we do these that you'll just catch me at the wrong time, and I'll go, oh, yeah, no, that's the – when you're trying to give away something.
just to put your mind at – rest. I'm not going to prison for that. So, okay. No, I would not kill you for that, just so you know.
You'd be very angry with me.
But, yeah, I'm not going to prison over that. So, so you can rest.
Well, that's good.
Rest assured. Okay, you don't have to worry about that. Okay?
That's good.
Mistakes happen. I'm not going to jail for that. By the way, still, no correct answer. He has gone through a lot of phone calls. What Major League Baseball franchise now is on the clock for the most years without a no-hitter, after Baltimore and San Diego were the leader in the clubhouse in that stat, both 52 years since 1969, and both of those were snapped this year. So now that moves somebody else.
The Padres had never had one until Musgrove.
Yep.
Ever.
Well, that's right. That's franchise existence, yes.
We got three different answers on the text line that aren't right.
None of them right?
Okay, loaded line, so I don't – yeah, there you go. I think we finally Max is saying about 42 wrong answers. So finally, we've got the right answer.
We got the right answer now?
We've got the right answer. But we'll
I was going to tell a quick story.
Yeah, go ahead.
There's only one no-hitter in New York Mets history. That was by Johan Santana.
Yep,
yep.
And in that game, Vanderbilt assistant coach Mike Baxter made a great catch to preserve the no-hitter against the Cardinals.
Oh,
and,
yeah,
and broke his
that.
Collarbone on the play, crashing into the wall. But that was
good call.
That's the only no-hitter in Mets history. So they were on that list. They and the Padres were the two teams forever that never had a no-hitter.
Am I right in saying that Glavin, Maddox, and Smoltz never had one?
Yes, you're right.
I think that's true.
Yeah.
I think that's right.
And you could put a list together of about 50 pitchers who you're like, I've never even heard of that guy. And that person threw a no-hitter. Like, a no-hitter, like one night of greatness can happen.
I think Warren Spahn may have had one. I don't remember.
But I don't think the big three did not.
The big three didn't. No, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
There's a lot of great
pitchers. The Braves
pitchers
have had,
never
one,
had one,
but I don't think it was, you know, one of those.
Well,
guys.
Think of the great pitchers for the Mets for all those years.
Yeah.
Like Tom Seaver and Dwight Gooden and, you know, on down the line. None of them ever threw one.
This is just a wild theory of mine. Once again, this is kind of going off. Mike Kelly presented facts and numbers. This is just me going off just a feeling, okay? So that's my disclaimer. I have nothing to back this up on, but I feel like we're getting a lot more no-hitters these days. It's not It's not becoming as special as we used to look at it.
Very true.
And my theory is, this is my theory. Tell me if I'm off or not. I feel like because the game is either strikeout or home run, nobody's putting the ball in play anymore. So nobody is interested in making you work for outs. They're either trying to hit it over the fence or they strike out. We know strikeouts continue to be at an alarming rate, just outrageous. It's already this year, as we sit here on May the 6th, it's already like massive numbers. It's going to set a new record. Like every year they set new record for strikeouts. I think it's because they don't make the infield or the outfield. They don't make the defense work at all. They don't ever put it in play because it's like boom or bust. And so, therefore, when you're on and everybody's missing, he had 12 strikeouts last night, and they were getting fooled left and right, and nobody's really even attempting, you know, with two strikes to maybe change their swing. They're still just swinging away.
Not hitting for contact.
Yeah, I just think that
swinging for the fences.
It's easier to do it. I'm not saying it's easy. I'm just saying it's easier. It's not. I don't view it the same way we used to view no hitters. Maybe 15-20 years ago.
I agree. It's. I think the pitchers are just better. The pitchers throw harder. They've got more nasty, non fastball kind of stuff. And like you said, Darren, the focus of the hitters is to work the count and go for the long ball. They don't adjust. They're not worried about striking out. So less balls in play means less chance that a guy's going to hit a bleeder,
right?
And just, you know, squib one in there.
Yes, that happens.
We've seen many no-hitters ruined
by
a squibber.
Yes.
Know, just putting the ball in play. So, yeah, I think it increases the chances for a no-hitter, plus the shifts and everything like that. Like, you could hit some hard balls, and it's right at the shift.
I don't feel like we're wowed as much by no-hitters.
I agree.
You know what I mean? It just doesn't have the same effect of
a perfecto, yes, because those are
that
still
is – right. That's as we saw, like that one little tiny mistake. That's it. That's all that separated him. He should have been perfect. I mean, he really was perfect last night.
There was one earlier.
It should have been a perfect game.
Should have been, yeah.
There was one earlier this year that was, wasn't it like the ninth inning, the perfect
guy
game
hit
got blown?
There's been two that were blown by hit batsmen.
Yeah.
It wasn't a walk or an error. It was a guy getting hit with the pitch. One of them was two outs in the ninth.
Was
Carlos Rodon, he had two outs in the ninth, and he hit a guy.
Did Mussina,
for a perfect game.
Yeah.
Did Mussina have that happen to him twice? Either two outs or one out in the ninth and lost his no-hitter?
Yeah, but Rodon got the no-hitter, but he missed
the perfect game
by hitting the batter with two outs in the ninth. Jeez. Yeah, there's been plenty of pitchers that had two outs in the ninth and lost
the hitter. Wasn't Mussina like – I feel like he lost a couple.
I feel like that's right. I don't know exactly. I don't remember. But that's up there.
Craig and Old Hickory. Congratulations, Craig.
Craig won.
Finally. Somebody.
And the team is?
All right, hang on. These are what we had on the text
line.
All right. Indians.
Or always a great guest because they usually hold the record for longest something they haven't done.
Or the bum Indians, as Nate said.
What?
Yeah. Cubs.
Well, I wouldn't have given him the prize even if he did have it right.
Phillies. Another for the Cleveland Indians. Mariners. Another for Phillies. And the answer is?
All those were incorrect. Pittsburgh Pirates.
The Pittsburgh Pirates.
45 years. They're now on the clock.
So 45 years ago.
And I got that from our buddy Jason Stark.
Mm. Okay, so 45 years ago, we're talking early 80s?
Well, 45 years ago would have
70s?
Been, no, mid-70s.
Mid-70s. Yeah. So John Candelaria. Is that the last Pirate?
The Pirates in the 70s.
Max, right? Is that right?
I think it's Candelaria. It would
have been 76, right?
Yeah.
I think 76?
Candelaria, I think, did it on Monday Night Baseball. Al Michaels was on the call. Is that the last one?
I'm looking. A little slow. The internet a little slow today.
That was in 76.
Slow. Okay.
It's got to be. It's got to be, John.
Max said the most common guest teams calling into him were the Indians and the Phillies.
The Phillies? The Phillies. I mean, Roy Halladay.
Yeah, I was going to say, Halladay did it just, what, a decade ago?
Oh, yeah. Well, he had more. I mean, he had more than one.
Well, and he did it. Was it during the World Series?
He had one in the postseason. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Was that perfect?
No. I don't think so.
I don't think it was perfect.
I think it was a no hitter.
Isn't Larson still the perfect?
I was gonna say. What's
was that?
I thought.
Does he have a perfect?
I thought Doc had a perfect.
How many has there been? A dozen.
Perfect games?
Like 12?
I think it's like 16.
Oh, is it up to?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah,
up
he
to
did
numbers?
Have a. Let's see. I think he did have a perfect game in the playoffs.
I thought it was like 12 or 13.
No, he had a perfect game, but not in the playoffs. He had a no hitter in the playoffs. The NLDS.
23 all-time perfect games, and Don Larson's was in the 56 World Series.
Right. He's still the only postseason perfect game.
That's more perfect games. So how many no-hitters have we had?
No.
My goodness. I didn't realize there had been 23.
Well, it's gone up. I mean, there's been more.
I know.
Later because of the approach. Man, somebody's got some good stuff going
on. I know.
On the grill.
So, like, do we need to take a long break? Because
if we're not back.
Whatever they're grilling down below us.
It does smell good.
Holy moly.
So did you mention this with the Pirates that now according to Wikipedia, they had a combined one in 1997.
No, it's not combined.
Right.
These are not combined no hitters.
Yeah. Yes. Just a regular.
I just kind of felt like I didn't need to. Yeah, no. Right. I didn't. It's not combined.
So they had a combined.
This is traditional nine-inning no-hitters.
If there's one thing we don't tolerate here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, it's Ricardo Rincon erasure, Darren. Come on.
Well, Darren, I don't know if you remember this, but we were on the air one night when we were doing the evening show. Back in our old
02, probably?
Yeah, and there was a night, and I think it was a nationally televised game, but remember the Astros no-hit the Yankees, and they used, like, eight guys.
Yep.
Like, they just kept putting a new guy in. It was a bullpen night, and they threw a no-hitter, like Brad Lidge and a number of different relievers. That'd be a great trivia question. See how many you could name.
Didn't the Rays do that with
a
slew of pitchers? Yeah.
Did the Rays do it, too?
Remember when they were going, like, every two innings?
The opener. Yeah. With the opener. Yeah, it's probably happened since then. But that was, I think it's the most, maybe it was the Astros.
Eight pitchers.
I don't know if it was eight. I think it was a lot.
Wow. Very cool. So congratulations, Craig and Old Hickory. You just won a really cool prize.
And the way hitters are hitting this year, there will be more no-hitters.
Probably be another one. Yeah, probably will. All right, we'll come back. By the way, Elliot Freeman coming up at 1 o'clock. We're going to touch on some things. We got a little sidetracked there, giving that away. That was fun. Some things that John was saying about this Aaron Rodgers deal. And coming back to the Titans and Ryan Tannehill and what Bill Barnwell put out. We'll do that to wrap up the third hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase. That's next. Mom, this Mother's Day, with a gift of a 1.5-hour picnic theme styled photo shoot, that's going to be at McKenzie Lee Photography at Centennial Park. Don't forget, Mother's Day is Sunday. Picnic setups, sips, and snacks will be included. Not only will you enjoy a fun and beautiful park picnic with your family, but you'll also receive a 60 or more digital photos to remember it. Go to thegamenashville.com, the contest page, and enter to win today. Very cool. Make sure you take care of mom on Sunday, okay? Just do that for all the wonderful moms out there. By the way, the Titans have made a couple of transactions. They have waived cornerback Kareem Orr. They have signed running back Brian Hill, defensive back Greg Maben, and linebacker Justin March. But Brian Hill with the Falcons last year is pretty productive.
Yeah.
Okay. That's he had like 400-something yards rushing.
Yeah, that's interesting that they would do that.
Yeah.
Kind of makes you wonder about Darrington Evans and what's there or what isn't.
Do you think that's why they did it?
I mean, I view Darrington Evans as the receiving back.
I don't think that's geared toward him.
Yeah, I mean, I still think there's a ton of question marks with him because you saw one game where you go, oh, there it is. But it was one game, and it was against Detroit. So, yeah, I don't know. That's interesting. Kareem Moore has been around for a bit. Maben has two. Mm-hmm. I guess they're looking at teams with him.
Yeah.
So, interesting. I wonder when there's going to be some resolution with tight end because I feel like there's going to be something there, whether it's a trade or somebody gets cut and they sign a free agent.
Willie, you wanted to present something on the Tannehill and the whole discussion with Clayton.
Yeah. John Clayton, first of all, I was curious to see how strong he would say one way or the other. You know,
he's pretty strong.
He was pretty strong saying he thinks it's over. He thinks it's going to – and he is in a city – where he had a similar story with Russell Wilson. He was like, that's all overblown. That's
he said
not
it's the most overblown story he's ever seen.
Yes. So that's it. That was interesting contrast. So he's like, hey, you know, this guy or that guy in terms of trades, we know the 49er thing, that ship has sailed probably, but here's what dawned on me. All of the trade potential partners out there, if you want to call the Titans a potential partner, and this is all fantasy world, right? But there is no other team that could trade them back a quarterback the caliber of Tannehill. That was one point that John made. He was like, nobody, look at the quarterback market, right? There is no quarterback market. If Jordan Love, if they don't think he's ready, and even if they do think he's ready, they got to be prepared to take a step back, a big step back. But if they did come to the conclusion, this is in theory, the Packers, if they're like, you know what, we just have to trade him. Forget about what I said yesterday. I just don't believe that they should do that. But if they do come to that conclusion, we have to trade him, I don't think anybody else could produce a quarterback who has been as productive. Ryan Tannehill's been a top 10 quarterback for the last season and a half. So he's not Aaron Rodgers, but he brings a lot to the table. And you would get whatever else in the couple of first-round picks or whatever else you get. So that's a lot different. Like, Denver cannot put that kind of thing together. If you make a trade with Denver, you have Jordan Love as your quarterback, better or worse.
I think if you're a team in the AFC, you have more leverage because I think there's doubt they want to move him out of the conference.
No question. They don't want to deal with him in their conference.
So Denver and Tennessee would have a leg up just being in the AFC.
Well, and I think, too, that if you get, to your point, Will, if you get Tannehill back, I'm not going to say – you know, I'm not going to guarantee, hey, they're a playoff team, but you know, we've seen what he's done with A.J. Brown here. You got Devontae Adams there. Aaron Jones is not Derrick Henry, but he's still pretty good. So, and they're
he's more than just pretty good.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying in comparison to Derrick Henry. So I think he steps in there, and they're still in contention to make the playoffs for sure. So I mean that's where. That's where, you know, they might have a chance. Do I think that that's going to happen? No. I don't think it's going to happen at all. Where I wonder, you know, just going on the Barnwell trade that he put out there, would two first rounds be enough
for them to consider? I mean, that's a lot. I wouldn't give up more than that. A quarterback who is top 10 in the league plus two first round picks? Come on, that's a lot.
By the way, Aaron Jones has had 30 touchdowns in the last 2 years. 30. Two seasons.
So would you trade him for Derrick Henry?
No, I don't. That doesn't make any sense.
That's what I'm saying. He is great because of Rodgers.
Maybe so.
I think it's a little more. Tannehill has been benefiting from the greatness of Henry. I think it's a little bit more of that. That's just my observation. But so I don't know. This is all in the fan. It's fun to talk about. I don't know how real.
Well, I don't know. I mean, when you say fantasy, I mean, if you're sitting there praising John Clayton for coming on and saying, hey, look, it's over in Green Bay. Remember our Tom Brady discussions. And everybody's like, why you guys keep talking about it? Because we're like, because everybody, if it's in the news cycle constantly and people keep coming on and saying it's going to happen, then at some point you have to believe there is something to this. It's going to happen.
And the bottom line is the Buccaneers, they rolled the dice, they went for it, and they won the whole thing. So that's going to be a factor in the way some people think. If you're thinking big and you're thinking radical, you have to look at it and say, you know what, it has happened, and it's happened well. When the Broncos made the big play for Peyton Manning, there were some that were saying, man, that's a little risk, man. The guy's, can he come back?
Yeah, how many neck surgeries? What?
That it worked.
Here's the thing on the Bucs, too.
Twice. Went to the Super Bowl twice.
And the thing on the Bucs is they didn't dominate until they got into the playoffs, and then we saw what they did. But, you know, they didn't win that division. They got in on a wild card team. It took them a minute to kind of get things going. And they did, and then they go on the run in the playoffs, and then we saw what they did in the Super Bowl. They dominated that. But that was the interesting part there. But I'm with John. I think it's over. I think he's played his last game as a Packer.
I don't know how you walk this back.
No. He has
– when you call for the GM to be fired –
yeah.
How do you walk? I mean,
you used the how Jerry do you coexist? Reference.
Right. The Jerry Krause reference. I mean, how do you.
He's trying
you
to burn
that?
The bridge. He's trying to burn the bridge. But the question is, if you're the Packers, you can be strong and say, I know what you're doing, Aaron. But you play for us, man. We're the Packers. We're a storied franchise.
You can do that all you
we're
want.
Not that dumb.
Right.
I'm sorry.
He's
not either. We are not a bungling organization. We are not the Cincinnati franchise that has been, you know, decades of failure. We've done pretty well. We stand by what we've done. And I'm sorry you can't get over that we drafted one guy. I just think that, you know, they're justified if they want to go that route.
And he's justified to walk away and go host Jeopardy or whatever else.
That's fine. Go host Jeopardy. See how much you like that.
Right. Well, I think he'd like it fine.
I don't think that's true. Really?
I do.
Think a few weeks into the season he'll be like, oh, I'm very satisfied.
Okay. Here's the
Aaron Rodgers wants to play.
I think the Carson Palmer conversation is interesting, even though, yes, Bengals, Packers, very different organizations. But here's another big difference.
That's already proof, by the way. The organization doesn't win.
No.
If the player stands pat, if the player digs in, the player is going to win. We saw this. What was Palmer was a decade ago?
Yeah.
So we've already seen it work.
The Bengals did well in that trade, though.
The Bengals dug in, and they're like, we are not.
But
you go ahead, do whatever you want. They were doing exactly what you're saying.
But they got a lot back for Carson Palmer.
They did.
And they started winning a lot of games after he left.
You don't think Green Bay isn't going to get a lot for Aaron Rodgers?
Sure. But here's the thing.
They don't want to trade him. I think did Carson Palmer really win? He went to the Raiders. He wasn't all that great.
He won because he got out of Cincinnati.
And he was willing to retire. He retired and walk away. The difference is Rodgers could do it, and he's won MVPs. He's won a Super Bowl. He's done it all. Palmer was willing to do it having not done it all, and he came close when he went to Arizona. But he was willing to walk away with nothing, essentially, $80 million in the bank. That'll work, but –
you think?
Yeah, man, I could live off that. I'd be fine.
Well, that's really awfully generous of you.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm a generous guy. That's what happens when you have a swing like I do.
Hashtag bold.
Yeah. But
Chase, this just in, right in our desk. He says he could live off $80 million.
I could practice. I could spend that time practicing.
He can make $80 million work.
I would spend that time practicing my baseball swing and my golf swing. And
well, you would have your own
personal trainers.
I was gonna say, yeah, you would have your own machine right there in your backyard.
Yeah,
you know, you'd have your own indoor facility.
Exactly.
I'd get the sim, man.
Get the sim. I'd have the golf simulator. I'd have the racing simulator.
Batting simulator.
Rapsodo.
Now, you probably wouldn't make it the rest of your life because you'd probably be broke.
Exit velocity.
On simulators?
Well, you might.
Well, he could be the next guy in that 30 for 30. He'd be in that 30 for 30.
He
broke.
Could, right.
Remember the 30 for 30 broke?
Yeah.
All the athletes' tales of woe?
I would not
Men,
open.
Men, women, all sports. Hey, man, I had a lot of money. I blew it all.
This 30 for 30.
So you're saying I'm going to go open a car wash?
Lenny Dykstra.
They all open car washes. I mean, like,
I think Lenny's the only guy I knew who had a car wash.
Well, it was like more than just a car wash.
Oh, he had a lot of stuff going on.
He had.
Were some things going on at that car wash.
It was a little bit layered.
My worry for me would be I would make more trips like the one I made earlier this week and be a little more daring on the bets. With $80 million, mm-hmm. You know, that
I would seriously worry for you.
I'd find myself at the Circa.
You would live it up. There's no doubt. But I would, at some point, there would be a discussion of Chase. You need to pull back a little bit.
Yeah, I'd but invest. I'd
in
find
fact,
good
give
investments.
Me give me a side pod. I can store for you. We'll do like the mafia guys. We'll go dig a hole in your backyard, hide some money. By the way, the Los Angeles Angels are releasing Albert Pujols.
Really?
Today.
How many years, how much money are they eating on that one?
By the way, this is what surprised me. He is in his final year.
Oh, this is the last year?
Yes.
Okay, well, I can see it then.
The 10-year, $253 million contract. I know, 10-year. He's in the final year.
So he's done, right? He's got to be done.
I guess he's done.
He's done. I don't think. He can't run. He can't run.
When could he?
I mean, that's the thing. He's been in this can't run for 5 years. Yeah.
What's his average right now? Can't hit either.
If he hits on the ground, he cannot make it to first.
Yeah.
If he hits it to right field, they can throw him out at first.
Yeah. I think that's true.
He's done. Go back to
the Chiefs are signing Camilea Correa.
Oh, good for him.
How about that? Did Correa play last year?
After he was let go?
Did he latch on somewhere else?
After he was traded? Yeah, they traded him.
Oh, they traded
they
him
did
to Jacksonville,
him.
Right?
Yeah.
Is that Jacksonville?
Yeah.
Did he play for the Jags last year?
He was on the team. Okay. I don't know what he did. That was a weird thing here because I thought he had some moments. He wasn't like your superstar, but he was, you know, he was a good depth piece.
He had 5 sacks in 2019 here.
Yeah.
All right, we'll come back. Elliot Freeman to begin the final hour of Darren, Donnick, and Chase as we are live here at the Corn Ferry Tour, the Simmons Bank Open down here at the Grove Golf Course. Beautiful place down here in Arrington, College Grove to be exact. More coming. We'll switch gears and talk with Elliot next.